It has been a long week. We talked about the party scene in Athens, the Satanic Temple in Atlanta, and why author Juno Diaz does not give advice. But as we do every Friday, it's time to gather a group of smart people together, kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It is time for The Break Room.
Well, this is pretty disgusting. A nationwide recall is in place after two Floridians found a dead bat in their salad.
We're United Airlines. You do what we say, when we say, and there won't be a problem. Capiche?
You know, you had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
Joining us in the break room, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, Democratic strategist Howard Franklin, Sam Burnham of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia, and filmmaker and podcast producer Kalina Baller. Welcome, everyone. You made it to Friday.
Yeah, we did.
Yes. Morning.
Morning. Good morning.
All right, let's see if we can get some lively discussion going here. Everybody knows you need a little time away from the office from time to time, right? Just to decompress.
I can't take it anymore!
Presidents need time away also, but some say Donald Trump is taking a little too much of it. Since taking office, he's spent more than $29 million on travel. That's more than double what President Obama spent in a year's time. So, should there be limits on a president's vacation expenses, the amount the taxpayers pay for?
I'll jump into this one first. I think the model here should be another politician who's flirted with both parties, who's won high elected office, and that's New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. I think the New York Times reported that Bloomberg spent $650 million of his own money covering travel, offering perks and benefits to his employees, et cetera. And he took $1 for his salary for the 12 years he was the mayor of New York. I think Donald Trump...
What if you don't have $650 million?
You know, Trump says he's gotten way more than that. I would hope that in this case, for someone who has the means, that he wouldn't cost the American taxpayers. He promises to represent the kind of money
he has. Okay, but that's voluntary. I'm wondering if we should actually just put a limit on the amount that taxpayers pay for vacation travel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We need to do that. I mean, you lead by example. I mean, no one ever wrote that we were supposed to endorse or support the lavish lifestyle of, you know, whatever leader we have. And we live in a system of checks and balances. And in a system of checks and balances, one of the key things is that you're supposed to show you're responsible in your management of government resources, right? So, I mean, what he's doing is neither sensible nor is it an example. And on top of it, it can even range on the unethical, because in many cases, the expenses are benefiting his own companies.
Because he's going to his own resort in
Maryland. That's right. And it's more of a security risk, too. Because at this point, it's not just about the vacations and spending the money. It's a security risk at this point. Because if you keep going to your own properties that you own, you're more of a target. You and your family are more of a target. And that's a liability on the entire United States. So, yeah.
Well, it's more difficult to secure Mar-a-Lago than Camp David. That's what security experts say.
Agreed. Yeah. So all of it is just it's a money pit, and it's a waste. It needs to go away.
I would like to see it just use some restraint. If you're going to, especially for people who campaign on, we're going to cut wasteful spending, we're going to lower the budget, we're going to repair the amount of debt that the American people are in, and you're governing people who work every weekend and you're flying off to Florida every weekend. And, you know, we look at some of the numbers. I read an article earlier this week that some of the numbers are in dispute, and they're like, well, it may not cost $3 million a trip. It may only cost $1 million a trip. Only $1 million.
The reason we don't know is because the White House won't release those numbers, so we have to make estimates based on previous years.
So they're basing it off an Obama trip that was maybe or maybe not similar. Regardless, if you're spending that much money, you're going on a vacation that costs what it would take a middle-class American 10, 15, 20 years to make that much money.
That makes no sense at all.
Right.
I don't understand why his base isn't in more of an uproar about this. I just don't know why.
Alternative facts.
Oh, gosh.
that's a completely different break room topic.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on a vacation, though, maybe you'd want to invest in a yacht.
It seems like what you guys are looking for is some sort of P. Diddy-style shrimping vessel. This isn't Diddy-esque at all.
You guys crazy? This boat is awesome.
The Georgia legislature passed a bill giving a tax break for yacht repairs that cost at least $500,000. Many people say that is tone deaf and a giveaway to the super rich. Defenders say it will encourage yacht repair businesses to locate in... You're laughing already, but this is a serious thing. They say yacht repair businesses will locate it in Georgia. What do we think?
Really, we're going to build an economy on yacht repair business. I mean, they don't even have that in Florida. I mean, where do they think we live? Where do they think we live? I mean, we're not in Monaco. We're not in Monte Carlo. I mean... That's really not gonna
yeah, add Atlanta
much.
Doesn't
to
have a coastline.
No, exactly.
Well, I can tell you, as probably the only regulatory affairs lobbyist around the table this morning.
Oh boy!
I can tell you,
oh
boy, more often than not, when these deals get pushed, it's because there already is an investment that's been teed up, and that organization is typically lobbying the administration to make it happen. My understanding is that there is a $50 million investment in a yacht repair and some business that's supposed to come to Savannah. And I think they've specced out 800 jobs, et cetera, et cetera. I would tend to agree if there isn't something teed up for it. But my understanding is that we're losing yacht repair business to Florida. And this is just that internecine battle between states for investment, for companies, et cetera. That's just what it is. And that's what it takes when you want to be
the
number one
city. We're losing on a lot of industries to California.
Why do we drag up $500,000 from? Okay. If we can give them, I love tax credits, tax breaks, tax repeals. Woohoo! You know,
don't you want to get rid of taxes?
Get rid of taxes. But the thing is, why 500,000? Why is that our magic number? Why not 50,000? Why not 5,000? Why not, you know, an average guy who has a sailboat that might be considered a yacht that doesn't cost 500,000 and it sure doesn't cost that much to fix it? Why would he
that really
not
broadens
get a break
the number
on
of people
his repair?
That would get that tax cut.
But it would also broaden the amount of people who could afford to get their yacht repaired and therefore do business with the companies they're trying to recruit. Why make that threshold so high that it doesn't benefit the majority of the people with a boat?
I think we're missing the point around this table is that the idea of a shrimping vessel P. Diddy-esque yacht. Who wouldn't want that? As a millennial, I am triggered.
That is from the show Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And if you've seen that episode, you know that was about the farthest thing from a
exactly.
yacht
great
they
episode.
Ever could have had. We only have a couple minutes left, so we might as well get started on talking about United Airlines, and we can finish up in just a moment. Hector's already ready. All right, go ahead, Hector.
All right, Munoz needs to be fired.
Munoz is the CEO of United Airlines.
Yeah, he needs to be fired. I mean, you should treat people with decency and with respect. And United has obviously reached a point where they're training the individuals not to care. His leaked memo, pretty much reinforced bad behavior and said that it was all okay and according to the rules. They took quite a while to apologize. So that's a very dangerous position. That's when. You know, the customers realize that a company is not caring about them, then customers stop caring about the company.
Right.
I mean, and Delta, I mean, is not as bad as United, but Delta could reach that point. I mean, last week they canceled planes, flights galore because of the storms. And it was basically because they were not organized enough. But you should have seen the airport. It was a mess. I mean, I was traveling with my son to see colleges on his birthday. And, you know, we were like over 4 hours in a line, only to be dismissed in less than 5 minutes by a Delta employee that was extremely well trained. And she couldn't care less. She really couldn't care less. So Delta needs to start doing something. I mean, United is a foregone conclusion. But, you know,
only have about 30 seconds. Does anyone want to follow up here?
I've been on flights in which I've been asked to, you know, volunteer my seat. It was overbooked, blah, blah, blah. But I have never run into this sort of complete disregard, you know, for this customer. And then this was insane. And when I refused, because I said, I really need to get there, they said, okay. And they moved on to the next person. I just don't understand why that was so difficult.
Yeah, I think that's I've never seen that happen when you've actually already boarded the plane. I've seen it happen beforehand, and they offer it.
We're going to
explain. And when I've boarded the plane, I've been on,
sure.
And they say,
we'll give more
hey
details
guys.
In just a moment. It is Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. Coming up, we'll continue this, but also White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer and his shocking account of the Holocaust. And what is the strangest thing you've ever found in your lunch? This is on Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room. My guests are filmmaker and podcast producer Kalina Baller, Sam Burnham of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia, Democratic strategist Howard Franklin, and Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez. And we want to say a thank you, as we always do, to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink. It's good coffee. They're online at savannahcoffee.com. I want to return to the question of United Airlines. This, of course, is in relation to the story of the physician that was forcibly removed from the United flight. His name is David Dow. His lawyer says he lost two front teeth. He sustained a concussion and a broken nose, and in the end will need reconstructive surgery. The video of him being dragged out of the flight with blood coming out of his mouth has gone super viral. What's after viral? So we already heard a little bit from Kalina and from Hector. Howard or Sam, you guys want to weigh in here?
I think the easiest solution to this case is customer service, which we don't get from any large businesses anymore.
That's correct.
Especially the airlines.
Hate of that.
But when you deal with numbers and you're like, you are customer 647295, then that's a whole lot different than dealing with Sam.
I think this goes well beyond customer service. I think, you know, we're in a post-smartphone society, and we would be hearing about maybe, you know, an article or two about this entire scenario if people hadn't actually whipped out their camera phones on the plane, gasping at what's actually happened and that footage going viral. I think the police department, sheriff departments, et cetera, have had to deal with this the last number of years. Organizations that have started with an assumption of operating above board now have to know that anyone can record what you've done, and it can have disastrous implications.
Yeah, they lost more than $1 billion.
More than $1 billion in market cap. Also, don't hire nightclub bouncers for airport security.
But like, that was a police officer.
That would help.
I mean, he must be moonlighting in somebody's club. I mean, they beat this guy up in addition to dragging him out.
Okay.
And then let somebody get overbooked tonight at that Braves game for the opening of SunTrust and see how that's going to turn
right.
out.
Oh, boy.
They don't overbook ball games and concerts. Don't overbook airplanes. You got so many seats, still so many seats.
In the airline's defense, I can't believe I'm saying that overbooking actually keeps our prices down. That's an entirely different story.
It keeps our customers down, too.
Okay, let's move on to a more disgusting story. Fresh Express is recalling its organic market side spring mix. That's because two customers in Florida found a dead bat in their salad.
Wait! We can't stop here. This is bat country.
They were only sold at Walmart stores in the Southeast. That's us. But the question isn't, is that gross? It is. Yeah. But what is the worst thing you've ever found in a meal or a box of food?
Guess what? I found a small insect and precisely the same brand of a salad mix. That said, I usually don't shop for my veggies at Walmart. I shop at the farmer's market or at Aldi even, which is better. But that's the worst I've found, and it was precisely in the same product.
Well, it was really fresh. There was
Oh, my God.
It was alive. Thanks.
I've never actually found anything that I can recall that, you know, that is on that level of gross. I mean, you find, you know, a hair here and there, maybe, but, like, an entire bat? I mean, a bat?
Yeah.
What is going on in Florida, for one? Because Florida has been messing up with all these crazy animals. Let's just, okay, we've all seen these videos of these crazy huge crocodiles and things, right? So what is really going on in Florida? So secondly, that is just, that's beyond gross. What is happening?
Okay, nobody else has any gross stuff.
It dropped at the very moment the bag was being sealed, all right?
This is a perfect transition because the other question is what's happening at the White House press briefings? Not so much because of breaking news stories, but because of some unexpected comments that have occurred. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer, earlier this week, at the start of Passover, addressed the use of chemical weapons by Syria's president, and while talking to reporters, he made this claim about Hitler.
We didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
That is patently false. Hitler gassed millions of people, his own people. But Spicer went on to describe concentration camps like this.
He brought him into to the Holocaust Center. I understand that.
Holocaust Center. Okay. Spicer has apologized for misspeaking. My question is, when is it misspeaking and when is it a fireable offense?
This is well past a fireable offense, I'd imagine. But he serves at the pleasure of the president, so he will be there. I did see a couple days ago a Republican congressman came out, publicly called for his resignation, said he wasn't serving the president well. I imagine you'll get many more calls like that very soon.
Yeah, he should be fired. I mean, the worst thing is that he's normalizing Hitler. And that's not a good direction for any culture, you know, any nation. But on top of that, he must have been a really poor student. This guy went to Connecticut College. Connecticut College is a decent school. I mean, if you don't know that, you shouldn't be a White House spokesman.
No, I doubt highly that he didn't know that. He knew about the Holocaust. He knows. I mean, at this point, this is common knowledge that you know all of the atrocities that went on. What this showed me was that he just did not care. He does not care. And when you don't care, you can hide it all you want. But when pressure comes on you, these things come out. So this is one of those things where he has to go. He had to go a while ago, but he really, really needs
She's
to go.
She's literally throwing up.
I have hand gestures out here right now.
He just is really a bad choice for the mouth of the White House. I'm not even going to say that he was being purposefully anti-Semitic. I don't think that was his case. I just think he's not very brilliant.
I don't think he's not brilliant. He doesn't care.
He's a bad communicator.
I would take it a step further, though. This is a post-fact White House. This guy got inaugurated and then sent his press secretary out to go say that this was the largest crowd for inauguration ever. Right? Like, at some level, doesn't the administration have some responsibility to stop someone who takes the podium? Who's purveying things that are clearly not facts?
Well, there's a detachment from reality.
I feel like
when I watch him, we're watching an episode of Veep or something. It's surreal out here right now.
All right, we are. If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. We have Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez with us, also Sam Burnham of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia, and also Democratic strategist Howard Franklin and filmmaker and podcast producer Kalina Baller. Okay. We spoke a moment ago about the controversy in the White House press briefing room. Now let's talk about everyone's very fictional favorite political operative, Olivia Pope.
So you lost someone you loved. You lost the one person who felt like family. Well, guess what? Grow the hell up, because that is how it is.
Executives with ABC scandal, whew, have revealed that the network actually really pushed hard to get a white woman to play Olivia Pope on Scandal. And the question for me is, does the show's success now prove audiences are ready to see more people of color in starring roles?
Of course they're ready. I mean, they're not only ready, it's overdue. I mean, how many folks want to look at a TV, you know, environment where every single show looks like Mad Men?
I always think you got to be careful when you see a black person break a barrier, because then the media jumps up and says, well, then now it's post-racial, right? And I don't know what America wants to see on its television, but I don't want to take one actress's or one president's success as this blanket acceptance of blacks in leadership roles on television, etc. I don't know that I agree that everyone wants to see it. I think it should be happening. My own personal viewpoint, I appreciate yours, Hector's, but I don't know that I think America is just, it looks at Olivia Pope and would want to see that done again.
I'm not saying all of America. I'm just saying a sizable portion of America is already there.
Yeah, I think America is just ready to see good acting. And Kerry Washington's amazing. She's amazing.
All right, we can question that.
Okay, you know what?
I have hand gestures for you.
No, I'm just saying. But this is something that audiences have been ready to see for quite some time. And I think that Hollywood executives have, you know, they default for what they know makes money. And for a long time, you know, it was just kind of intrinsic that, okay, you put these kinds of actors, these kinds of faces on screen and people will watch automatically because they're familiar. Well, now we're familiarizing more faces of color. And this is just the next step, and it's going to continue in this trend, in my opinion.
There's one sure way to find out. Try it again.
There you go.
All right. Speaking of that, let's talk about another viral video, shall we? There's a video of white people rapping about marijuana that's now been viewed by millions and millions of people. Here's a portion of that song. Yeah, they have altered their voices. You can hear that as well. It shows people we assume are from Georgia based on all of the Georgia gear they're wearing. And one man's actually rapping while wearing a Confederate flag vest, which some have called ironic. So, is this an appropriation of black culture, Kalina?
I think it's an appropriation of Migos culture. And that it sounds very much like the sounds of hip hop from the South that you're hearing now. I need a minute to collect my thoughts here.
Migos is a hip hop group that from the early 2000s that formed actually in Lawrenceville. So
yes.
That's what you're talking
and
about.
And their latest album is named Culture, funny enough.
Yes.
That to say, hip hop today, I mean, mainstream hip hop today is already appropriated, right? It's hard to draw the line as to where, it's representative of culture and where it came from. It's 40 years old now. It's no longer a baby art form. And I think, as it grows, as it becomes more popular, more global, we have to accept some, maybe not accept, but expect some appropriation of the culture and speak out when we don't think it's appropriate. I think is what it comes
down to. Yeah, it's an art form at this point. So, it's going to be parodied and mocked. And
that's right.
That.
Exactly.
This folks lack the cultural sophistication to go for parody. I mean, I don't think they're really aware of what they're doing. I mean, this is a pretty bad example.
There's a lot of appropriation going on in that particular video. It's great.
The most offended person is our libertarian. Who would think?
Oh, my Lord.
I'm thinking back to my great-grandmother and how she always told us, you're a Southern gentleman, you're a Southern lady, babe, your way. And then I'm seeing this girl bouncing around talking about how she's a Southern belle, and I can hear my grandmother, don't be so common. You're being common.
Oh, my Lord.
Quit being common. Quit talking about pot
Quit
and dancing around.
Being common.
Yeah, I think they just grabbed on to whatever is hot and viral at the moment. And that's what they did. And they're trying to get views,
They did get views.
Yeah,
all right. So let's talk about something else that's gotten millions of views. That's Atlanta's traffic. Already bad before the I-85 bridge collapsed. Even when that is repaired this summer, congestion problems are going to get worse. That is because, according to census data, more than 90,000 additional people have moved to the area within the past year, and we're going to get millions more in the years ahead. We could end up to be as crowded and dense a city as New York City, but without the subway system. So what's the tipping point? Is there a point at which the city becomes too crowded and you feel it's time to go?
The crowd is not the problem. I mean, the lack of subway is not the problem. The problem is whether the people in the crowd are going to be flexible and culturally tolerant of difference. I mean, if you have that sort of crowd...
When they're in their cars.
Well, that's a separate issue. That's the fact that Georgia drivers are Georgia drivers.
Georgia drivers are drivers from everywhere else, which makes them very bad
Georgia
drivers.
Exactly. The point is whether the crowd is going to be educated enough to be able to live together.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of an unfair comparison, New York to Atlanta. Yeah, Atlanta proper is just over 500,000 people in the city. We only get to that 6 million number when we take in another 8 or 9 or 12 counties. I think it's more like Metro Los Angeles to Atlanta. Another place has got terrible traffic and doesn't have much of a transit system.
Los Angeles has more of a transit system at this point.
That's
than we
true. They just made a big investment last year, and it's coming along. That to say, I don't know that I'm not leaving Atlanta first and foremost to answer the question, and I hope that the people who decide to move here get better at driving, or to Hector's point, more tolerant in terms of other ways, other modes of transportation, biking, walking, transit. To the extent that it's available, particularly in the inner city,
it's going to happen. When 85 collapsed, we all of a sudden heard people. I know that there are people who downed MARTA expansion and all of this, and suddenly they're like, "Oh, we need other modes of transportation." I said, "Well, you just said no to this thing." So it's going to happen. It's going to require a culture shift. It's going to require people really wanting to make a more comfortable way of living if you want to live within city limits or within that multi-county metro region. So
it's also going to be very dependent on resources. Yeah. Atlanta is already talking about interbasin transfer for water, i.e. taking my water and bringing it to Atlanta from the Coosa River Basin or somewhere like that.
Well, Florida says we already took theirs.
And Florida and Alabama. And, you know, we can quickly find our way back into a water war that we're thinking we just won. But did we? Is it over? Can we begin? Can we produce the energy that we're going to need for Atlanta? Can we make the water? Can we other resources? More to a city than just packing people into a small space and trying to make them get along.
And I like to call, you know, Atlanta the kind of the show me what you got city. And I think that we can lead the way in innovation at this point. There's ways that we can, being in the South and being that we used to be a transportation hub for all kinds of commerce, I think this is going to be an opportunity for us to shine on a national scale. So this is going to be something going forward for the next 5 to 10 years that can really put us on the map even more.
All right, we have 1 minute, so I'm going to see how fast you guys can be. An Emory University student recently won $100,000. That student gave that money away to New School in Atlanta, which is a high school here, a private institution. Quickly, our rapid fire responses. If you had $100,000 you didn't need, who would you give it to? Kalina?
You know what? I would give it to NICU hospitals.
Okay.
I'll give it to Historic Preservation.
I know Howard. Rostam, so congrats to him. And I would give it to my alma mater, Morehouse College.
And Hector.
Greenpeace, Amnesty International, Doctors Without Borders.
Okay, we're out of time in the break room. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, Democratic strategist Howard Franklin, Sam Burnham of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia, and filmmaker and podcast producer Kalina Baller. You can answer that question for us as well. If you had $100,000 that for some reason you didn't need, who would you give that money to? Let us know. You know how to reach us at OST Talk on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook as well. For the day and for the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Have a great weekend.